It's not super often that I am struck by major disconnects within the service itself. Places where there's just a stunning contrast between one part and another. But this morning was one of them. You see, it's a brief history lesson, but when the Episcopal Church switched to a new lectionary some 20 years ago, there are lots of good things about it. Primarily, it's ecumenical, so that we are hearing the same lessons every week as the Roman Catholics, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, and millions of other Christians. Although I need to caveat that, because there were two weird days in 3-year cycle where we did not adopt the common lectionary, and today is one of them. We actually stuck with the old prayer book lectionary for the Sundays of Christmas. So we are probably the only church in town hearing this gospel today. Everyone else got it last week. And no, I have no idea why. I looked. I have no idea why. So most of the time, there's this collect of the day that opens the service. And it doesn't usually match up with the readings anymore. Because the lectionary changed the readings, but we didn't change the collects. So there's no theme that runs between them. There's no thread holding them together. But we heard the original reading for today, and that makes this contrast even more jarring. Because the crafters of this prayer book thought that the perfect collect of the day for this story would be the one that talks about human dignity. And then they paired it with a reading about Herod killing all the babies and the Holy Family only surviving because they got tipped off by an angel, fled their home, and lived as refugees in a far-off country. I mean, I guess it's better than the old 1928 prayer book collect that, I swear to you this is true, actually prays about infants glorifying God by their deaths. And yes, that happens in this story too. You might have noticed in the gospel passage, there's 3 verses that they skip over. Well, that is to protect your delicate ears from hearing about Herod having every child around Bethlehem under the age of 2 killed because of his fear that there would be a king more powerful than him, that he would one day be overthrown by Jesus. Now, we need to be upfront with one other little detail. Outside of Matthew's gospel, there is absolutely no historical evidence that this slaughter actually took place. Could it have? Yes. Herod the Great was a man who was probably known for bloodshed more than anything else. He had to fight for his kingdom, and his plan was to never lose it. He killed the descendants of anyone who would be his rival, including his wife and 3 of his sons. And this is maybe the craziest part of all. He left instructions that when he died, they should go execute a bunch of other people just so there would be mourning throughout the land. Herod was a ridiculously brutal ruler, and so killing a bunch of babies seems kind of in character. And doing it in just one small town maybe just escaped everybody's notice. There's one commentator who kind of did the math and said a town like Bethlehem back then probably only had like 20 boys, 2 or younger. Not that that makes any of this more palatable, but it does make it more probable. Now, what is better attested by far is that Mary and Joseph took Jesus to safety in Egypt. And that's not as weird as it might sound, because in that century at least, there was actually a pretty big Jewish population there. And so it was a common place to go and seek refuge. But it was one heck of a long trip. If they went to Alexandria, which is just a random guess, but it was like a third Jewish and it was a major city, that would have been 350 miles. Or figure like a 45-day walk each way. But we also have to remember there's a tendency of ancient writers that we can't overlook. Matthew, just like the other evangelists, was not writing a history book. He only included the things that interested him, that advanced his narrative. The late Father Raymond Brown, who was one of the great Roman Catholic New Testament scholars, he calls the Gospels portraits of Jesus, where the authors select and arrange all the information they have for the purpose of making a story. So then, what is the point of this whole geography lesson from Matthew if it is not geography and it is not history? Well, simply put, his whole book, the whole Gospel of Matthew, is trying to show us how Jesus is the fulfillment of prophecy. It's a formula Matthew uses over and over again, 10 times in total. And he doesn't want us to see that Jesus was the subject of predictions that just happened to come true. That's not how he understands prophecy. What he wants us to see is that Jesus was the literal and physical embodiment of all the law and the prophets, that everything had come true. One of those fulfillments was something we just heard. Out of Egypt, I have called my son. Now in Hosea, when it was first written, that was God speaking of the nation of Israel as a child. And now in Matthew, it's used for another son. But also sort of the same son, because Jesus was, as Tom Wright puts it, Israel in person. It's a beautiful hyphenated phrase, Israel in person. Because his mission was to complete their mission. And if all that is the case, then this story can be about only one thing. Just as Moses led his people out of captivity in Egypt, Jesus, the new lawgiver, would come out of Egypt to deliver people from captivity again. It's beautiful. It's a new exodus, a new deliverance by the divine one who humbled himself to share our humanity, who came to restore the dignity of human nature. I guess the opening collect works after all. Amen. Amen.